This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In any old family home, even if you don't talk about history, it is always there. It's in the people who currently live in the home. It's in pictures hanging on the walls, in closets stacked with boxes and layered with dust, in fixtures out of fashion and sometimes utility that nevertheless stay because updating costs too much. As to the house itself, after several generations, a home becomes a family member in its own right, holding ancestral history and secrets with nowhere else to go. Until, of course, someone decides it's time to make a dramatic change. As part of Opera Theatre of St. Louis's 50th season, Lynn Nottage, two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright and librettist, and poet and writer Ruby Io Gerber, who is Nottage's daughter, have joined forces to write an opera exploring intergenerational conversation. That work is called This House. And ahead of spring rehearsals and its world premiere at the Loretto Hilton Center in Webster Groves on May 31st, we have the librettist duo in studio to talk about This House. Lynn and Ruby, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And welcome to St. Louis.
Yes, we're happy to be here.
So I would like to start with the play. And this is a play, Ruby, that you wrote as an undergraduate at Brown. Talk with us about This House and the house itself. Is it modeled after an actual home?
It first came from my own experience growing up in a multi-generational house, which was actually the same house where my mother grew up.
Okay.
I was writing it during the COVID-19 lockdown, and mm-hmm. I was thinking a lot about home, being away from home, and also seeing as we were losing lots of elders, specifically in the Black community, mm-hmm. Because the pandemic disproportionately impacted the Black community.
Right.
So I was thinking of notions of home, of story, of place. And I encountered this quote from this essayist poet, Dion Brand, which really helped shape the direction I wanted to go with this story, which is, Black experience in any modern city or town in the Americas is a haunting. One enters a room and history follows. One enters a room and history proceeds. So I was also really interested in the materiality of Black history,
mm-hmm.
in the fact that there's also a lack of it.
Yeah.
It's a silent history.
So if this is during lockdown, this means that both of you, Ruby and Lynn, you were together in this home during that time?
We were together for part of the time.
Okay. And was there a conversation that was happening between you, Ruby, as you were writing this, or did you do this sort of in your own space within this house?
Yeah, I was working on it and unbeknownst to her, and it wasn't till the piece had been finished that I wanted to share it with her, since mm-hmm. it's not based on our family, but it's very much inspired by real characters mm-hmm. From our family. So I wanted to get her thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah, and I read the play and I was immediately moved by it, and I mm-hmm. thought that this needs to have a life.
Okay. What was there one particular character that made you feel that way?
I don't think there was one particular character. I think it was the notion of generations being in dialogue mm-hmm. that excited me. As Ruby mentioned, is that the home that she grew up in, and certainly the home I grew up in, was a multi-generational home.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was really lovely about it is the fact that on each floor there were different memories stored, but we could move between those floors and have this really robust, lovely dialogue.
Yeah. How many generations are we talking?
We're talking about three generations.
Okay. And at one time.
And one time, yes. In one brownstone.
Okay. And I can relate to that. I also have grown up in a multi-generational home and live in one now. This is a new home, however, so it doesn't have the same kind of history. And Ruby, you mentioned a silent history.
Yeah.
What about it is silent exactly?
I mean, I think when we look at, if we're thinking about the materiality of buildings, is, I mean, just the reality of a lot of architecture in this country, especially old architecture, is that it was built by enslaved hands and and a lot of enslaved lives were lost building the buildings that still stand today.
Mm-hmm.
But then jumping ahead to a more recent and current history, you have all of these homes that maybe have only been in a family, in a Black family, for one generation or two, in which there were families raised, kids who walked across the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because of gentrification, because of redlining, they're displaced from those homes. And that doesn't mean that their history is disconnected from the place.
Mm-hmm.
It still exists there. They exist there, even if they've been pushed out.
Right. Ruby, talk with us a little bit about some of the characters. And is there a protagonist in the story, or is it, like, should we think beyond sort of that standard of understanding a story?
There is a protagonist in the sense that there's one character who is making a major decision that
mm-hmm.
impacts everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But the wonderful thing about both the play and what we've done in the opera is the house actually becomes the central character.
Okay.
And it's a composite of all of the characters and
right.
has a voice of its own that's brought to life with each texture and
mm-hmm.
each piece of history from the different decades of the characters.
So whose idea then was it, Lynn, to collaborate and to use, you know, Ruby's play as the source material?
Well, I think the collaboration really came out of a desire to work with composer Ricky Ian Gordon again. We had done an opera, Intimate Apparel, which was a very successful, really beautiful collaboration. And we're trying to figure out, what do we do next?
Mm-hmm.
And around that time, I read Ruby's play, and I thought, this play really sings to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be lovely to figure out a way to turn it into something larger.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought the idea to Ricky, and he immediately sparked to it.
Okay. So opera, it is different from a play. You can have a play with music. What is it about opera, and then working with Ricky, that just felt like this is the right thing to do?
Well, with opera, with music, you're able to tell a much more expansive story, and you're able to go into some of the emotional nooks and crannies that you can't necessarily do with just words. And I remember when I was first collaborating with Ricky, one of the things that he said to me is that you can say "I love you" with music in so many different ways
mm-hmm.
than you can say it with language. And
mm-hmm.
I really love that notion
yeah.
that you can create different textures and sonic landscapes that you don't have access to with just language.
Right. Well, it occurs to me, too, that saying "I love you," depending on a person's generation and their experiences, can also be very different. It doesn't have to be those words exactly. They're expressed, you know, in unique ways. So, Ruby, the idea then of turning your play into an opera, had you thought about that at all as you were, you know, as you were writing? Was it a beautiful surprise?
It was a beautiful surprise. I think being of a certain generation, opera, especially libretto writing, has felt kind of inaccessible or not, wasn't something I really knew that people did
mm-hmm.
until Intimate Apparel, which was my first encounter with a modern opera.
Mm-hmm.
But once she suggested the idea of being able to translate some of the stage directions, because there were all of these written moments that wouldn't be seen if, you know, just when the play is produced,
mm-hmm.
that could then, like she was saying, Ricky said, become part of the sonic texture of the world
mm-hmm.
building.
Yeah, one of the lovely things when you come to see the opera, as Ruby had mentioned, is that the house is a central character.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Ricky was able to do is bring the sounds of the house to life. And so the creaking of the window is the voice of a soprano, but also one of the characters, and the stairs and the boiler, all of those take on the sounds of not just people, but the home itself. Mm-hmm.
So you could almost close your eyes and not look at the set and get a feeling for what's happening?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Intimate Apparel, before we get much further, is an opera that is set in Manhattan mm-hmm. in 1905. And the protagonist is a 35-year-old black seamstress who makes intimate apparel for a very broad range of clientele, includes black and white women, some who are in sex work, some who are, women who are very privileged and have their clothing tailored for very different kinds of social settings. She's worked for a long time to open a beauty parlor for black women. So in a way, a kind of home, right? In a different sense. Was there something about this play or this opera in particular, Ruby, libretto, the story and the kind of history that it was covering that then made it easier for you to think about writing a libretto that would go with your play, This House?
Absolutely. I mean, I think something that's so wonderful about working with a composer like Ricky, because he was already attached before the libretto was written, mm-hmm. He has such an understanding of the American songbook, which I think is really important, especially for a piece like This House, in which it's telling a history that spans a century.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that some of that history could be put into the music made it a little more liberating to actually tell this story, where I was like, oh yes, there are all of these big historical moments, from the Great Migration to the AIDS epidemic to the current gentrification of Harlem, that we want to tell, but there's also only so many words.
Mm-hmm.
And so writing a libretto, you really have it's a structure, it's like scaffolding for the music, and you have to trust the music and trust the process so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it a lot more doable.
Yeah.
Things that I couldn't accomplish in the play, we were able to give life and give voice to in the opera.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, you've been writing for a very long time. How was this experience of writing with Ruby different from maybe other collaborations you've done before? Did it come with any apprehensions about, like being the mother and daughter in this?
Well, I always think it's a little scary to invite someone else into a process. But the fact that Ruby was my daughter and the fact that we already have an intimacy, I think it made it a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, Ruby was able to interrogate my practice and to ask me difficult questions in a way that I think some other collaborators might not have been able to do.
Okay. Is there an example maybe of one that she asked? Whether you remember it, Lynn, or Ruby, you have a recollection of one of those moments where it's like, we're peers here writing together.
Sure. I remember writing a line and Ruby saying to me, oh my God, that's so corny. And thinking, oh, she's right. And what I realized is that I was doing some lazy writing and she was able to point it out.
Yeah.
And I think that if it hadn't been my daughter, someone else probably never have said it in that way. But I was thankful that she did, because she was right.
Okay. Ruby, do you remember what that was?
I can't quite remember the exact line. I know it was something about getting coffee. It was something really simple about like going and getting coffee, which a character does, and just the language. I was like, someone that age would never say it like that.
Oh, okay. Well, and then I guess this also brings up, I want to go back to corny, but also how you said it and the fact that, Lynn, you have written a number of librettos. Does that, can you kind of get away with corniness sometimes because of the music?
Well, I think you can never get away with corniness, mm-hmm. but I think that the music can sometimes camouflage it in a beautiful way.
Yeah, yeah. And I realize, too, that, Ruby, you are a poet. So the words that you choose are very intentional. Was there something in writing a libretto that made that poet side either more powerful, or something that you had to sort of negotiate a little as you were trying to write a different medium?
I think, as with all collaboration, it really was relinquishing some control. So much of poetry is control and being able to be precise. And if you want something to be abstract, it's abstract, and the reader will make meaning of it. Mm-hmm. Versus with Ricky and my mother, there were moments in which they're like, we do not understand. This language is beautiful, but it has to further the plot.
Okay.
And I found that to be a challenge, and ultimately really forced me to grow as a writer.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with Ruby Ayo Gerber and Lynn Nottage. This is a daughter-mother team, and they're writing the libretto for This House. This House will have its world premiere at Opera Theatre of St. Louis on May 31st. I want to return to the question about characters, as we're sort of building the world around a little bit. And I asked earlier about a protagonist. Ruby, talk with us about the house being a main character. And among the human characters, who do you think sort of best captures what the house was and its potential?
I think something important that I realize we haven't mentioned that's central to the story is that it's the story of a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a haunting, and that means that the house, you should be able to hear the house when you said, mm-hmm. when your eyes are closed, the house can conjure itself. It comes into existence. But jump in if you disagree. But a character who we actually never see, who's really important to understanding the history of the house and the setting, is Minus Walker, who is the person who first buys the house, who, mm-hmm. with the wave of the Great Migration, he was a sharecropper in the South who goes and bought a house. And that's one of the first lines in the opera is, Minus Walker bought a stately, neglected dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps understand the stakes of keeping this house and like all of the labor and that went in and the hopes that have been placed,
mm-hmm.
in really building one family's legacy.
Yeah. What do you think?
No, I do. I definitely think that that's true. And I think at the center of the storytelling is just the battle to preserve the legacy. And each generation, there is a conflict between siblings who want different outcomes for the house. And so in the Harlem Renaissance, we have a character, Uncle Percy, who's a bon vivant, who invites singers and dancers and artists into that space, and he really turns it into a salon, but he's a spendthrift. And in the process of opening his house, he also is spending a lot of money, and the house is in jeopardy, mm-hmm. and his sister just wants to fill the house with a family, and they get into the conflict. And then the next generation, what we experience is two sisters, Lucy and Ida, and one sister is a Black nationalist and a poet, and she again fills the house with all of this life, and Lucy again, Ida, her sister, wants the house for the family, and we find that tension in that generation. And then we move to the present, mm-hmm. where we have a brother and sister, once again, who are trying to determine, how do we live in this space?
Right.
You know, do we invite others into the space and turn it into a communal space, or do we save the space just for the family? And I think that tension is central to the story that we want to tell.
Mm-hmm. Ruby, you mentioned haunting. there are spirits, there are ancestors, there are ghosts, and then there are also voices. So as we're thinking about those characters too, is there room for them to stay? As we're thinking about sort of a future generation or who may come after the youngest walker makes a decision about what she wants to do, Lynn or Ruby?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of the central tensions of the opera, is there room for all of these memories? Is there room for all of these characters that haunt the space? Or in order to survive, do we have to push them out?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we welcome them in? And I think that that's part of the story that we gravitate toward,
mm-hmm.
is, yeah.
So the nature of these voices, how would you characterize that, Ruby?
I mean, the thing about each voice is that they really tell not only a personal history of a family, but also the history of the Black community in a given moment. Like, what were some of the struggles that each generation has had to deal with? And really thinking about Black temporality, it's the past is never past. It's a non-linear history in which, yes, is there space enough for all of the voices, but also the voices are never gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially as we celebrate Black History Month, which is increasingly in jeopardy of being celebrated, and we're told what's appropriate, what's the past that needs to stay past,
mm-hmm.
and how to just move on.
Yeah.
It's so important to remember that the past is still present, and the issues of one generation are still the issues of the next. And though each generation of walkers is dealing and contending with a different conflict, as my mother said, like, the conflicts still are the same and they carry over and spill, and it's not so neat that one history or one voice replaces another.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a choir, it becomes a house,
yeah.
It becomes a full nonlinear Black history.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a few months, that is when Opera Theatre of St. Louis is going to world premiere this house. What was it that made opera theater the right fit for this particular story, Lynn?
Well, I think St. Louis is certainly the right place for this story because the city is grappling with the effects of gentrification and Black displacement. But Opera City in particular, I think it's the right space because they've invested so much time and care into nurturing new opera,
mm-hmm.
that there is a real desire to cultivate a brand new audience, mm-hmm. but also to find talent like Ruby Io Gerber and to tell stories that aren't traditionally put on the opera stage.
Mm-hmm. And we should note here that Opera Theater of St. Louis has introduced world premieres like Champion and Fire Shut Up in My Bones over the last several years. I mean, is that also something that you were thinking about as you made the decision to make sort of this the first home, so to speak?
Well, it's certainly in play because I think it's important when you have operas like Fire and Champion, it means that they've already invested in building an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And we were interested in being in conversation with the audience that they've been cultivating.
Yeah. One of the events that you participated in during your short time here this time was an audience Q&A after yesterday's matinee performance of the Reps performance of Clydes. What was it like, Lynn, to talk with an audience about both Clydes and then, you know, the upcoming world premiere of this house?
Well, it was really actually quite delightful,
mm-hmm.
because it's like the two sides of the brain. It's the opera brain and the play brain, and the two pieces are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And to move between that conversation, I actually was quite delighted by. And I thought that the production was beautiful of Clydes,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoyed sitting passively in the audience and watching a show that I haven't seen in some time. And then talking about an opera, which hasn't yet taken to the stage, was also really fun.
Mm-hmm. And very quickly, Ruby, what are you looking forward to most with the world premiere in May?
I'm excited to see this world in, that we've been in for so long, and a world that's also very familiar to us even before we started writing, come mm-hmm. to life.
Yeah.
And also how it resonates, even though it doesn't take place in St. Louis. As Lynn said, there's all of these themes that are very, very real and familiar to many cities in the United States. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear how the community connects mm-hmm. the work.
I'm looking forward to hearing that too. Ruby Ayo Gerber is a poet and writer and librettist, daughter of Lynn Nottage. And Lynn Nottage is a 2-time Pulitzer Prize winning playwright and librettist. The opera that they are working on together, This House, will have its world premiere at Opera Theater of St. Louis on May 31st. Ruby and Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha and I, our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.